Su Majestad, la Reina Máxima de los Países Bajos, defensora especial designada por el Secretario General de las Naciones Unidas para promover la financiación inclusiva del desarrollo. Excelentísimo señor John Kufu, expresidente de Ghana, enviado especial para el cambio climático. Excelentísimo señor Giuseppe Castiglioni, subsecretario de Políticas Agrícolas, Alimentarias y Forestales de Italia. Su Excelencia, Monseñor Luigi Travallino, observador permanente de la Santa Sede ante la FAO. Estimadas ministras y ministros, señora Taryn Cousin, directora ejecutiva del PMA, señor Miguel Mordassini, representante del FIDA, representantes de la sociedad civil, sector privado, estimados colegas, amigos y amigas. Declaro abierta esa conmemoración del Día Mundial de la Alimentación, que ese año coincide con el 69º aniversario de la fundación de la FAO. Ladies and gentlemen, as the new hunger figures show, we have made progress against hunger, but over 800 million people remain hungry. We can still reach the MDG 1 hunger target if we step up our efforts. We need to do this, and we use the growing momentum to commit and act to end hunger. Zero hunger, that's the true goal. And family farm is key in this effort. For decades, they were seen as a problem to be dealt with. The truth is that they are an important part of the solution of hunger and sustainable food security. The International Year of Family Farm and this World Food Day recognize the central role that these farmers play in reaching the sustainable future we want. At the request of the United Nations General Assembly, FAO is coordinating the International Year Family Farm. Later today, we will launch the State of Food and Agriculture, SOFA, one of our flagship publications. This year, SOFA is dedicated to family farming. There are at least 500 million family farmers in the world. This means that more than 9 out of 10 farmers are family farmers. They produce fresh food, and they are the basis of important food supply chain. However, at the same time, many family farmers, especially subsistence farmers, are part of the 70% of the world's food insecure population that lives in rural areas. As such, family farms exemplify a case of successful agriculture, but also rural poverty. I want to remind that many farmers are a very diverse group, so there is no one-size-fits-all approach to support them. They need a policy mix that allows them to adapt and flourish in today's changing environment. One central aspect is innovation. You will hear more about this today, so let me just say that generally speaking, we need innovation across the board in technology, policies, producer organization, research and extension. And in our case, family farmers need to be the protagonist of those innovations. Only this way can they take ownership of the process and ensure that solutions offered respond to their needs. Ladies and gentlemen, family farm is a key component of the healthy food system we need to lead healthier lives. The centrality of this has just been recognized in the outcome document of the second International Conference on Nutrition, ICN2. They were approved by consensus and finalized last weekend by the near 200 member states of FAO and WHO, and they are set to be adopted at the beginning of ICN2 on November 19. The Political Rome Declaration places a new focus on food system. This is especially relevant as it emphasizes the importance not only of nutrition enhancing food production, but also of the rest of the food supply chain in enabling healthy diets for all. The second ICN2 outcome document is the framework for action on nutrition. This document recognizes that governments are the main responsible to combat undernourishment. That's why the UN system efforts to overcome malnutrition has to involve and be accountable to member states and other partners in order to be accountable to the people. That means now nutrition is clearly recognized as a public good and a public issue. It's not only more a private issue. I believe the approved Rome Declaration on Nutrition and a framework for action provide us a very good starting point. It is a strong consensus that will allow us to move forward faster. That's what we expect to do after ICN2 that will take place from November 19 to 21 here in FAO headquarters. FAO is ready to play a leading role in this effort, supporting countries implement the framework for action. We are ready to do that because nutrition is the heart of FAO's mandate. As you walk into the building today, you probably saw the preamble of our constitution in marble in the entrance room. On the wall, written in marble, in our six official language, the preamble states that raising the levels of nutrition is FAO responsibility. So we are ready to discuss nutrition inside FAO. We are ready to support governments and act up with our partners to improve nutrition. It's our responsibility, and we will not shy away from it. Ladies and gentlemen, we are also working together to forge the sustainable, hunger-free future we want. Family farmers are the center on this effort. This is why we are celebrating them today. Thank you for joining us in this commemoration.
Thank you, Mr. Director General, for his inspiring World Food Day address. Tenemos el honor de la presencia en la ceremonia de hoy de un distinguido huésped. Invito a Su Majestad Real, la Reina Máxima de los Países Bajos, defensora especial designada por el Secretario General de las Naciones Unidas para promover la financiación inclusiva del desarrollo, a pronunciar su discurso como oradora principal. Su Majestad, usted tiene la palabra.
Muchas gracias. Mr. Graciano da Silva, President Kufuor, Mr. Castiglione, Archbishop Tavaglino, Mr. Mordassini, Mrs. Cousin, Your Excellencies, ladies and gentlemen. Good afternoon. It is a really privilege to me to address you during the opening of the ceremony of the 34th World Food Day. In this International Year of Family Farming, I salute the 500 million family farmers in the world who have made such a significant contribution to reducing hunger and enhancing food security. In the last decade, more than 100 million people escaped from hunger. Without the hard work of family farmers, this would have not been possible. When I think about family farming, the word that comes most to my mind is generations. Last year, during a visit to Ethiopia that we did together with the FAO, IFAD, and World Food Programme, I met a farmer called Johannes who produced haricot beans. He told me how he had obtained a small loan to buy better seed, how he had been able to double his harvest with these better seeds, and how his improved harvest provided the extra money he needed for his children's school fees. The extra income also enabled him to save and to invest more in his farm, safeguarding his family future even further. He was really proud to be able to give the next generation a good start in life. This is a striking story of empowerment. There are many, many similar examples. But we also know there's still a long way to go and that the fight against hunger remains one of the biggest challenges facing us today. Despite the very real progress since the year 2000, there are still over 1 billion people living in extreme poverty, many of whom live in rural areas, as well as more than 800 million people in the world that are still undernourished. The Earth has many mouths to feed, and every minute, 160 more are added. To satisfy increased demand, global food production will have to increase by more than 50% by 2050. And it is upon farmers like Johannes that we call to produce much of the additional food that the world population will need. Really, a very huge task. Every farmer knows that you must sow before you can reap, and that you need a supporting infrastructure in order to be able to do your job. Family farmers, while shouldering most of the burden of feeding the whole world, do not enjoy the range of support and services they deserve, let alone need. You will forgive me that in my capacity of United Nations Secretary General Special Advocate for Inclusive Finance for Development, I do pay special attention to one crucial need, and that is access to formal financial services such as savings, payments, loans, remittances, and insurance. Financial services enable farmers to generate income and insulate themselves from income shocks. It is now widely recognized that financial inclusion is a necessary component in delivering any ambitious new goal that may be set to end hunger. We cannot end hunger and increase smallholder productivity and incomes without it. Put differently, financial inclusion tailored to local and individual needs is vital to any sustainable solution. We know through empirical evidence that when smallholder farmers are offered savings accounts, they save even more. They invest more and have higher harvest proceeds as a result. The World Bank's Global FinDex database has also shown that having some form of formal savings is significantly associated with a 14% reduction of the chances of going hungry. Savings allow farmers to invest in their businesses and increase yields per acre. It also gives them a reserve to draw upon when they're affected by bad weather or many other setbacks. Even a small amount of savings can mean that a mother does not have to sell her chicken or other income-earning assets in order to pay a doctor's fees when a son or a daughter is sick. Access to formal credit also has a very positive impact. In sub-Saharan Africa, it is associated with a 9% reduction in the likelihood of growing hungry in an average month. But because farmers do not have a credit history, they do not get credits. And because they do not get credits, they will never get a credit history. We need to break this vicious circle by allowing farmers to secure loans to buy livestock and better seeds and have access to new forms of technology. This will allow them to innovate and improve their farming, just like Johannes, the farmer in Ethiopia. But also in Malawi, a project that offered farmers the possibility to make direct deposits into harvest accounts allowed them to invest 13% more in their farms, leading to higher levels of production and a 21% surge in revenue in only 6 months. Only 6 months. These are just figures, and figures may sound abstract, but we should never forget that behind these figures are real people, real families struggling to get by. Real family farmers seizing the opportunity with both hands to make a better life for themselves, their communities, the countries and for generations to come. We should also never forget that agricultural labor is mostly done by women. And still, women do not have access to the tools they need to be productive. We know that if female farmers had the same access to financial services as men, production in developing countries could easily increase by a quarter. Not to mention the positive impact they could actually have on the families of these women, their children, and their nutrition. But unfortunately, a substantial gender gap still persists. Global Fitness data reports that women living under $2 a day are 28% less likely than their male counterparts to have an account. On this World Food Day, we should applaud the role of women. During my country visits, I have met many female farmers with remarkable entrepreneurial skills, like Maria Daza in Bucaramanga in Colombia, who built a small but thriving citrus farm with just a modest loan from Fundación de la Mujer. Maria has been able to increase the scale of production through subsequent loans and is now even exporting her lemons to many countries. She is making a better future for herself and her family and helping feed the world. We need to ensure that more farmers like Maria Daza gain access to the right financial tools. Only then can we increase global food production and meet the world's future food needs. Smallholder farmers are indispensable allies in our struggle to end hunger and reduce rural poverty. I am confident that with the right financial tools, tailored to individual needs, together with strong national policies, smallholder farmers will be able to play an even greater role in this overall effort. All smallholder farmers deserve a supporting infrastructure. Getting there would take political leadership and a coordinated approach involving many partners. These include ministries of finance, ministries of agriculture, central banks, commercial banks, mobile network operators, private sector in general, payment service providers, and certainly the Rome-based agencies. Everyone has something to bring to the table. We are going to need all of you. Financial inclusion enables greater food production and food security. It is critical infrastructure for expanding equitable growth, combating poverty and hunger, and creating jobs for all the young people. I look forward to continue to working with you to achieve these goals in 2015 and beyond. Thank you very much.
Many thanks, Your Royal Majesty, Queen Maxima of the Netherlands, for your eloquent remarks on family farming and its important role in the effort to eradicate hunger and poverty and raise food security and nutrition, improve people's livelihood and the management of natural resources to protect the environment and achieve sustainable development, especially in rural areas and especially for women. I wish to express my profound thanks for her work as the UN Secretary General's Special Advocate for Inclusive Finance of Development, a role that is helping draw attention to the importance of rural financing, which has an even stronger impact when it's accompanied by improved social protection for poor rural population. I invite now His Excellency John Kufuor, former President of Republic of Ghana, to pronounce his statement like keynote speaker. His Excellency, you are the floor.
Thank you. Your Excellency, Jose Graciano da Silva, Director General of FAO, Your Majesty, Queen Maxima of the Netherlands, the UN Secretary General Special Advocate for Inclusive Finance for Development, Your Excellency, Giuseppe Castiglione, Undersecretary for Agriculture, Food and Forestry Policy of the Republic of Italy, Your Grace, the Archbishop Luigi Travaglino, Permanent Observer of the Holy See to FAO, Your Excellency, Ethereum Cousin, Executive Director of World Food Program; Dr. Michael Modassini, Vice President of the International Fund for Agriculture and Development; Excellencies and members of the Diplomatic Corps; distinguished guests; ladies and gentlemen, it gives me a lot of pleasure to be part of today's celebration, marking the 34th observance of World Food Day and also the 69th anniversary of the founding of the Food and Agriculture Organization of the United Nations. I congratulate FAO for its 69th birthday and the many successes that it has chalked over these years in working towards ensuring the availability of food for humanity and also advancing the cause of agriculture worldwide. The theme of this year's World Food Day, International Year of Family Farming, Feeding the World, Caring for the Earth, is one loaded with critical challenges as well as tremendous opportunities in agriculture as humanity strives to move forward with a single and collective destiny in the face of the overarching menace of climate change. This destiny is one of ensuring that whatever humanity does on our planet will not only aim at preserving lives, but also sustaining our planet Earth. This is why the search for measures and international protocols to mitigate and adapt to the effects of the climate change is so critical and must be undertaken with all the seriousness mankind can muster. Ladies and gentlemen, the current world population is about 7.1 billion. And the projection is that by mid-century 2050, this population will surpass the 9 billion mark. With such an astronomical population increase, it is estimated that world food production will have to increase by 70% over current levels to sustain humanity then. Thus, agriculture has to be revolutionized in order to undertake this mandate. Currently, over 1 billion people, representing 1 in 3 workers, are involved in agriculture, and most of the food that is provided to feed the world is being produced by over 500 million family farms around the world. In sub-Saharan Africa, over 60% of the entire workforce is involved in agriculture, and they are essentially smallholder subsistence farmers. Indeed, in many developing countries, family farms constitute nearly 80% of all farm holdings. These smallholder family farms are typically of small acreages and depend almost entirely on the labor of family members, most of whom are women, for sustaining and managing these farms. The family farm, therefore, will continue to be crucial to the increased food production as well as the increased agricultural productivity needed for sustained global food security and nutrition, indeed today and for the years to come. Ladies and gentlemen, despite being the backbone of world food production, most of these farmers operate under conditions of extreme poverty. For this reason, the urgent and undeniable need to reduce poverty and raise standards of living worldwide put smallholder family farming at the center stage. Current statistics on extreme poverty are so frightening. 1.4 billion people in developing countries live on $1.25 a day or less and are considered extremely poor. 22,000 children die each day due to conditions of poverty. Most of these 1.4 billion poor people, who are mostly farmers, tend to be untutored. Compounding the effects of extreme poverty is hunger that goes with it. Indeed, our own organization, the FAO, estimated that nearly 870 million out of the 7.1 billion world population, or 1 in 8, were suffering from chronic malnutrition in 2010 to 2012. Almost all of these hungry people live in the developing countries. In Africa, for example, from 1992 to 2010-2012, the number of hungry people increased from 175 million to 239 million, according to FAO. Poor nutrition, we are told, causes 5 million child deaths annually around the world, but mostly in developing countries. This, then, is the opportunity that is presented for enhanced development and transformation of family farming to help alleviate hunger and poverty, ensure income sustainability, and improved livelihoods. To achieve this, ladies and gentlemen, there is the need to enhance the profitability of the family farm. This will be done by transforming these family farms from their current subsistence level to business mode ventures, no matter how small their landholdings are. Once such a transformation takes place, enhanced agricultural performance will be rightly recognized as the key to growth and poverty reduction through its direct impact. Firstly, on job creation and increasing opportunities, especially for women and for the youth. And secondly, on food security and improved nutrition. And thirdly, on building resilience in peoples and communities. For example, from 1993 to 2008, Vietnam went from being a food deficit country to the second largest rice exporter in the world, largely by developing a smallholder farming sector. And poverty levels also declined from 58% to 15% within that period. Indeed, it has been established that GDP growth generated by agriculture is up to four times more effective in reducing poverty than growth generated by other sectors because the effects are on the people directly at the grassroots. Distinguished audience, some of the measures needed to boost the family farm to enable it to play its rightful role are the following. First, institutional reforms that strengthen land rights and land tenure systems and ameliorate land acquisition, especially through rental markets and, most importantly, land acquisition by women farmers who constitute 43% of agricultural labor force in developing countries. Secondly, recognition of the basic rights of the family farmer through targeted policies to enhance the participation of smallholder farmer organizations and collective actions needed to influence public policy on agriculture and investments. Thirdly, an integrated governmental policy on rural development, targeting the provision of roads, especially feeder roads, appropriate irrigation methods, electricity, social infrastructure such as schools, health centers, and adequate access to clean drinking water and sanitation. Fourthly, access to finance through affordable credit and insurance for the farmer. Creation of an effective agricultural value chain. Provision of government-led and robust extension services mechanisms for imparting research outcomes to the farmer. Price stabilization and up-to-date information on markets and market access through the use of ICT. Dissemination of timely meteorological information. Affordable provision of improved seedlings, fertilizers, and pesticides to the farmer. But ladies and gentlemen, a serious threat that could derail the achievements from these undertakings is the impact of climate change, which is now being acknowledged by the global community. And this is appropriately captured in the theme for this year's World Food Day, that the world is determined to feed itself and care for the earth at the same time. Without taking cognizance of climate change, our best efforts will be nullified. Agriculture has been described as both a victim and a culprit of climate change, as its direct share in the emission of greenhouse gases is about 14%. Additionally, the deforestation and land degradation that are associated with uninformed agricultural and other practices also caused an additional 17% of the increased greenhouse gases in the atmosphere. Hence, ladies and gentlemen, the call for climate-smart agriculture. Climate-smart agriculture is an efficient and effective intervention to ensure that agricultural production and productivity are enhanced for food security and income sustainability, while boosting resilience of livelihoods and ecosystems. It combines both climate change adaptation and mitigation into agricultural development planning and investment strategies, thereby taking advantage of critical synergies between them. This transformation will thus incorporate methods that ensure least depletion of the natural resource base for agriculture and vital ecosystems. However, it should be clear that the smallholder family farmer cannot by himself alone achieve the above because he hasn't got the mastery of science and technology, finance and public policy to cater for all the necessary inputs required. Thus, it is critical for the government to work with the family farmer to close the gap. Unfortunately, in many parts of the developing world, farming is done wrongly by destroying the environment through forest cover destruction. Timber is felled indiscriminately, surface mining that destroys the environment by applying poisonous and ozone-depleting chemicals and pesticides is the order of the day. Unplanned spread of urban areas has also caused destruction to ecosystems and the environment. A deliberate public policy needs to be enacted and enforced to ensure, among others, first, education to reforest our lands. Second, education not to choke our rivers. Thirdly, a ban on unregulated mining systems. Fourthly, community recourse to renewable sources of energy, such as hydropower, wind, solar, and geothermal systems. Public-private partnerships with strong regulatory mechanisms must be established. There is also the need to address the nutritional content of the food we produce by practicing nutrition-smart agriculture. Distinguished guests, in this connection, I'm delighted to share a few examples of what was undertaken during my tenure as president of Ghana. My country has, since before colonial times, been an agricultural economy. Even as we speak, it is not yet industrialized and depends largely on agriculture and the extractive industries. Over 50% of the people depend on forests and forestry products for their sustenance and their livelihoods. Currently, Ghana's remaining forest cover is only 21.7% of its land mass, a far cry from just four decades ago when the cover was over 60%. At this rate of deforestation, the country's forests could completely disappear in less than 25 years from now. Previous attempts to address this trend have stalled due to lack of enforcement mechanisms and poor leadership, as well as poor collaboration between stakeholders and policymakers. The need for the integration of sustainable livelihood activities into national forestry policies became felt by the time I assumed office. And in order to reverse this alarming trend, my government in the year 2001 launched a system of plantation development, paying attention to a number of factors that are key to development of family farms. Under the concept, the so-called modified Tonga system, MTS, which had been there even in colonial times, but not enforced, family farm units comprising landless migrants, women, youth, and many other able-bodied persons were given portions of degraded but relatively fertile prior forest land for food crop production while assisting in tree planting with a share in the tree revenues in future. The government consciously provided technology and extension services, specialized education in leadership, conflict resolution, business management, record keeping, access to finance, and access to markets, among others. These initiatives led to increased food security and nutrition of farm families, job creation, income generation for women and the youth, improved health, and overall standard of living. Additionally, in the cocoa sector, and as you know, cocoa has been the lifeblood of Ghana's economy for the past 100 years. The share of the producer price on the world market distributed between the government and the cocoa farmers, who are also mostly family farmers, was reversed by my government in the year 2001 from 60% to 40% in favor of the government to 40% to 60% in favor of the farmer. This, in addition to the free mass cocoa spraying undertaken by the government for the farmers and extension services provided by the government, turned the fortunes of the cocoa industry within 4 years. From the year 2001 to 2006, cocoa production in Ghana shot up from a low of 320,000 tons in the year 2001 to over 750,000 tons annually, the highest ever in the history over the previous century of cocoa farming in Ghana. The resultant effect of these policy changes and an implementation was that by the year 2008, Ghana had achieved the Millennium Development Goal of halving hunger and extreme poverty, 7 clear years before the target date of 2015. Indeed, Ghana leapt from developing country status in 2001 with a per capita GDP of just $400 to lower middle income status by the year 2007 with a per capita GDP of $1,300. So it can be done. And ladies and gentlemen, the leadership of the FAO and its efforts at ensuring global food security with sustainable ecosystems is one of the manifestations of the world community led by the United Nations to take control of the rapidly transforming global systems to a benign and positive destination for mankind. These efforts fit in squarely with the Millennium Development Goals transitioning into the Sustainable Development Goals that are set to follow in the year 2015 and the climate change negotiations that hopefully will culminate in a climate legal agreement in Paris, December 2015. These efforts give rays of hope that the current inhabitants of our world are bent on ensuring that development, as the world goes forward, will be sustainable, and resources will be used efficiently, and renewable resources will be more preferred to underpin human resilience than continued dependence on fossil fuels. Once again, I congratulate the FAO for its sustained and visionary leadership of the world in food security, coupled with nutrition security, as well as caring for ecosystems to give humanity a sustainable quality living into eternity. Thank you, Secretary.
Thank you, Your Excellency John Kufuor, former President of the Republic of Ghana, for your words, which highlight how to facilitate access to land, water, and other natural resources, especially in Africa, and how to implement public policies aimed to supporting family farmings, which are key component in increasing rural productivity, eradicating poverty, and achieving food security. I wanted to highlight this year that we have this gender balance between our keynote speaker. And we are sure that this way will continue in the near future. Italy has an important role in supporting family farming. I would like to express on behalf of the organization our profound gratitude for the collaboration and support of Italy as host country to the mandate of FAO. I now call on the representative of the Italian government, Honorable Giuseppe Castiglione, Under Secretary of State of the Ministry of Agriculture, Food and Forestry Policy, who demonstrated a strong commitment in increasing investment in agriculture, sustainable development, and with particular attention to the eradication of world hunger. I now invite him to deliver his statement. Onorevole, lei ha la parola.
Grazie, signor Direttore Generale, Graziano da Silva, Sua Maestà Regina Maxima, Presidente João Cufuor, Eccellenze, signore e signori. Sono particolarmente lieto di presenziare, di partecipare a questo importantissimo evento e intanto di portare il saluto del Governo italiano, del Presidente del Consiglio Matteo Renzi, del Ministro dell'Agricoltura Maurizio Martina, in un momento così particolare, in un momento così di riflessione sullo stato dell'alimentazione nel mondo. Lo sono ancora di più in quanto quest'anno è dedicata all'agricoltura familiare, il tema dell'agricoltura familiare, un settore che ritengo non solo sia una grande realtà del presente, ma anche una grande risorsa del futuro agricolo europeo e mondiale. Permettetemi di constatare che l'agricoltura, per il ruolo che assume storicamente all'interno della società europea ed italiana, si caratterizza largamente come attività familiare. Basti pensare che le aziende agricole a conduzione familiare rappresentano oltre il 95% delle aziende europee. È una realtà che consente di garantire una produzione alimentare sufficiente ed efficiente, crea occupazione, favorisce la salvaguardia delle tradizioni agricole, la loro trasmissione di generazione in generazione, non solo quindi prodotti, ma anche tecniche di coltivazione, di lavorazione, know-how, difesa della qualità. L'agricoltura familiare risulta oggi estremamente rilevante in Italia e nel mondo, sotto diversi profili. Innanzitutto per garantire la tutela del territorio e la vitalità delle aree rurali, per impedire che l'urbanizzazione progressiva delle aree rurali renda in futuro ancor più difficile la sfida, già molto ardua, di affrontare le difficoltà che si manifesteranno in seguito all'aumento esponenziale della popolazione mondiale. Infine, per la salvaguardia, come accennato, delle tradizioni agricole e delle tradizioni alimentari locali. Inoltre, i dati sull'agricoltura familiare nei paesi in via di sviluppo evidenziano che questo settore oggi può costituire uno strumento valido di contrasto alle gravi situazioni di povertà. Ritengo inoltre che occorre tutelare la famiglia anche a fronte dei fenomeni di land grabbing sempre più frequenti in diverse aree del mondo. In questo contesto, l'adozione proprio ieri da parte del Comitato per la Sicurezza Alimentare dei principi per gli investimenti agricoli responsabili costituisce, a mio avviso, un primo passo avanti in questa direzione. È nostro compito sostenere l'agricoltura familiare nel migliore dei modi. A tale proposito, dobbiamo tener conto del fatto che l'agricoltura familiare non si sviluppa sul territorio in maniera omogenea, bensì presenta caratteristiche differenti a seconda delle aree geografiche. Tenere conto di queste differenze significa innanzitutto elaborare politiche che rispondano efficacemente alle diverse esigenze del territorio, e questo vale sia per quanto riguarda il capitale e le risorse messe a disposizione, che per le tecniche di lavorazione e la collocazione dei prodotti sul mercato. È quindi opportuno che nell'agenda nazionale ed internazionale vengano istituiti dei programmi articolati in grado di rispondere a queste diverse esigenze. Un'altra sfida importante, soprattutto in Italia ed in Europa, è rappresentata dal progressivo invecchiamento delle popolazioni, della popolazione agricola, e quindi della necessità di assicurare un adeguato ricambio generazionale, anche e soprattutto nelle imprese familiari. La formazione in questo contesto assume un ruolo centrale, soprattutto al fine della integrazione tra l'innovazione e la tradizione nel settore agricolo. Voglio inoltre ricordare l'importanza delle donne e del loro ruolo nel contesto dell'agricoltura familiare, il loro apporto fondamentale nell'educazione nutrizionale, soprattutto nei paesi in via di sviluppo, per la preparazione dei pasti, ma anche per l'approvvigionamento delle materie prime. È indispensabile oggi rendere più efficiente il meccanismo di accesso alle politiche di sostegno e alle risorse, penso in particolare alla terra, all'acqua, ma anche all'accesso al credito e ai mercati. Permettetemi inoltre di evidenziare che nell'ottica di un rafforzamento dello sviluppo agricolo locale, possono essere utili iniziative volte a ridurre il numero degli intermediari tra i produttori e i clienti finali, che potrebbero contribuire a creare anche un clima di maggiore fiducia tra agricoltori e consumatori e a rafforzare al tempo stesso l'identità locale e la promozione del territorio. A livello italiano ed europeo contiamo molto sulla programmazione dello sviluppo rurale 2014-2020, le cui misure dovranno agevolare l'accesso delle aziende agricole familiari alle filiere alimentari locali, favorire una migliore integrazione nei canali della distribuzione, facilitare l'adesione a sistemi di qualità, valorizzare i vari prodotti, promuovere che vanno promossi non solo sui mercati locali, ma anche su quelli globali, grazie alle nuove possibilità offerte dalle nuove tecnologie di comunicazione e dell'e-commerce. Credo che sul tema dell'agricoltura familiare ci sia un ulteriore aspetto da prendere in considerazione, vale a dire la funzione sociale che esercita questo tipo e questo modello di agricoltura. Non dobbiamo infatti commettere l'errore di pensare all'agricoltura solo in termini di produzione o di distribuzione di cibo, ma occorre anche pensare a beni e servizi di tipo ambientale, di tipo culturale e di tipo sociale. Penso in particolare alla tutela delle risorse naturali, alla lotta al cambiamento climatico, più volte citato negli interventi che mi hanno preceduto, alla conservazione della bellezza del paesaggio, ma anche all'inserimento socio-lavorativo di persone in difficoltà, per cui le realtà familiari sono particolarmente indicate. Ritengo per questo che il tema dello sviluppo agricolo, dell'agricoltura familiare, meriti una attenzione particolare, proprio alla luce del doppio beneficio che può procurare all'interno della nostra società, sia in termini di beni individuali, quindi reddito, lavoro, ma anche per la salvaguardia del bene comune, ambiente e tutela del territorio, che nel nostro Paese in questi giorni è un argomento di particolare rilevanza e attualità. In tal senso l'Italia, nel ruolo di Presidente dell'Unione Europea di turno e come Paese del quale l'agricoltura familiare costituisce un settore vitale per l'economia nazionale, ha intenzione di continuare a collaborare con tutti gli organismi internazionali al fine di sostenere questo settore. Mi preme ricordare a questo proposito il ruolo fondamentale delle organizzazioni internazionali del Polo Romano. Io ringrazio per aver sostenuto anche il particolare attivismo del nostro Paese, dell'Italia, tra cui la FAO, di cui oggi abbiamo l'occasione di festeggiare il compleanno, la fondazione il 16 ottobre del 1945, e i grandi sforzi che queste compiono, le organizzazioni internazionali che queste compiono da sempre e quotidianamente per risolvere i grandi problemi della fame nel mondo. In conclusione vorrei ricordare che l'agricoltura familiare, contribuendo significativamente allo sradicamento della povertà e della fame nelle aree rurali, risulta di primaria importanza anche per il tema più ampio della sicurezza alimentare, al quale dedicheremo il grande evento di Milano e di Expo 2015. Questo evento, oltre a essere un luogo di sensibilizzazione pubblica nei confronti di questi temi, sarà una piattaforma di confronto globale che riunirà paesi, aziende, società civile, uniti insieme per discutere sul futuro della nutrizione e sulla sostenibilità dello sviluppo agricolo. Grazie.
Grazie, onorevole Castiglioni, for your persuasive statement highlighting the importance of the potential contribution of family farming to eradicate poverty, safeguarding the environment and nurturing our planet. Your highly valued contribution and presence today at the ceremony confirm the excellent collaboration between Italy and the organization in eradicating hunger from the earth. I should now like to invite the permanent observer of the Holy See to FAO, His Excellency Monsignor Luigi Travaglino, to deliver the traditional message of His Holiness Pope Francis on the occasion of the World Food Day. Su Eccellenza, lei ha la parola.
Come annunciato, tengo l'onore di dar lettura del messaggio che Su Santità del Papa Francisco ha dirigito con motivo della celebrazione del Dia Mondiale dell'Alimentazione al signor José Graciano da Silva, direttore generale della FAO. Un anno más, la Giornata Mondiale dell'Alimentazione si hace eco del grito de tantos hermanos y hermanas nuestros que en diversas partes del mundo no tienen el pan de cada día. Por otra parte, nos hace pensar en la enorme cantidad de alimentos que se desperdician, en los productos que se destruyen, en la especulación con los precios en nombre del Dios beneficio. Es una de las paradojas más dramáticas de nuestro tiempo, a la que asistimos con impotencia, pero a menudo también con indiferencia, incapaces de compadecernos ante los clamores de los otros, como si todo fuera una responsabilidad ajena que no nos incumbe. A pesar de los avances que se están realizando en muchos países, los últimos datos siguen presentando aún una situación inquietante, a la que ha contribuido la disminución general de la ayuda pública al desarrollo. Pero más allá de los datos, hay un aspecto importante del problema que no ha recibido todavía la debida consideración en las políticas y planes de acción. Quienes sufren la inseguridad alimentaria, la desnutrición, son personas y no números. Y precisamente por su dignidad de personas, están por encima de cualquier cálculo o proyecto económico. También el tema propuesto por la FAO para la presente jornada, agricultura familiar, alimentar al mundo, cuidar el planeta, pone de relieve la necesidad de partir de las personas, como individuos o como grupos, a la hora de proponer nuevas formas y modos de gestión de los diferentes aspectos de la alimentación. En concreto, es necesario reconocer cada vez más el papel de la familia rural y desarrollar todas sus potencialidades. Este año dedicado a la agricultura familiar, que ahora concluye, ha servido para constatar de nuevo que la familia rural puede responder a la falta de alimentos sin destruir los recursos de la creación. Pero para ello hemos de estar atentos a sus necesidades, no solo técnicas, sino también humanas, espirituales, sociales. Y por otra parte, tenemos que aprender de su experiencia, de su capacidad de trabajo y sobre todo de ese vínculo de amor, solidaridad y generosidad que hay entre sus miembros y que está llamada a convertirse en un modelo para la vida social. La familia, de hecho, favorece el diálogo entre diversas generaciones y pone las bases para una verdadera integración social, además de representar esa deseada sinergia entre trabajo agrícola y sostenibilidad. ¿Quién se preocupa más que la familia rural por preservar la naturaleza para las próximas generaciones? ¿Y a quién le interesa más que a ella la cohesión entre las personas y los grupos sociales? Ciertamente, las normas y las iniciativas en favor de la familia, en el ámbito local, nacional e internacional, distan mucho de colmar sus exigencias reales, y esto es un déficit que hay que atajar. Está muy bien que se hable de la familia rural y que se celebren años internacionales para recordar su importancia, pero no es suficiente. esas reflexiones tienen que dar paso a iniciativas concretas. Defender a las comunidades rurales frente a las graves amenazas de la acción humana y de los desastres naturales no debería ser solo una estrategia, sino una acción permanente que favorezca su participación en la toma de decisiones, que ponga a su alcance tecnologías apropiadas y extienda su uso, respetando siempre el medio ambiente. Actuar así puede modificar la forma de llevar a cabo la cooperación internacional y de ayudar a los que pasan hambre o sufren desnutrición. Nunca, como en este momento, ha necesitado el mundo que las personas y las naciones se unan para superar las divisiones y los conflictos existentes, y sobre todo para buscar vías concretas de salida de una crisis que es global, pero cuyo peso soportan mayormente los pobres. Lo demuestra precisamente la inseguridad alimentaria. Si bien es cierto que en diversa medida afecta a todos los países, la parte más débil de la población mundial recibe sus efectos antes y con más fuerza. Pensemos en los hombres y mujeres de cualquier edad y condición que son víctimas de sangrientos conflictos y de sus consecuencias de destrucción y de miseria, entre ellas la falta de casa, de atención médica, de educación. Llegan incluso a perder toda esperanza de una vida digna. Para con ellos, tenemos la obligación, en primer lugar, de ser solidarios y de compartir. Esta obligación no puede limitarse a la distribución de alimentos, que puede quedarse solo en un gesto técnico más o menos eficaz, pero que se termina cuando se acaban los suministros destinados a tal fin. Compartir, en cambio, quiere decir hacerse prójimo de todos los hombres, reconocer la común dignidad, estar atentos a sus necesidades y ayudarlos a remediarlas con el mismo espíritu de amor que se vive en una familia. Ese mismo amor nos lleva a preservar a la creación como el bien común más precioso del que depende no un abstracto futuro del planeta, sino la vida de la familia humana a la que le ha sido confiada. Este cuidado requiere una educación y una formación capaces de integrar las diversas visiones culturales, los usos, los modos de trabajo de cada lugar, sin sustituirlos en nombre de una presunta superioridad cultural o técnica. Para vencer el hambre, no basta paliar las carencias de los más desafortunados o socorrer con ayudas y donativos a aquellos que viven situaciones de emergencia. Es necesario, además, cambiar el paradigma de las políticas de ayuda y de desarrollo, modificar las reglas internacionales en materia de producción y comercialización de los productos agrarios, garantizando a los países en los que la agricultura representa la base de su economía y supervivencia, la autodeterminación de su mercado agrícola. ¿Hasta cuándo se seguirán defendiendo sistemas de producción y de consumo que excluyen a la mayor parte de la población mundial, incluso de las migajas que caen de las mesas de los ricos? Ha llegado el momento de pensar y decidir a partir de cada persona y comunidad, y no desde la situación de los mercados. En consecuencia, debería cambiar también el modo de entender el trabajo, los objetivos y la actividad económica, la producción alimentaria y la protección del ambiente. Quizás esta es la única posibilidad de construir un auténtico futuro de paz que hoy se ve amenazado también por la inseguridad alimentaria. Este enfoque, que debe haber una nueva idea de cooperación, debería interesar e implicar a los estados, a las instituciones y a las organizaciones de la sociedad civil, así como a las comunidades de creyentes que con múltiples iniciativas viven a menudo con los últimos y comparten las mismas situaciones y privaciones, frustraciones y esperanzas. Por su parte, la Iglesia Católica, a la vez que continúa su actividad caritativa en los diversos continentes, está dispuesta a ofrecer, iluminar y acompañar tanto la elaboración de políticas como su actuación concreta, consciente de que la fe se hace visible poniendo en práctica el proyecto de Dios para la familia humana y para el mundo, mediante una profunda y real fraternidad que no es exclusiva de los cristianos, sino que incluye a todos los pueblos. Que Dios omnipotente bendiga a la FAO, a sus estados miembros y a cuantos dan lo mejor de sí para alimentar al mundo y cuidar el planeta en beneficio de todos.
Muchas gracias, Su Excelencia Monseñor Travaglino, por el mensaje anual del Papa Francisco en el Día Mundial de la Alimentación. La FAO aprecia el compromiso de Su Santidad en estos aspectos cruciales de la humanidad y se alegra por la presencia del Papa durante la próxima Conferencia Mundial sobre la Nutrición, AICEN2, el próximo 20 de noviembre. I'm now pleased to invite Ms. Ertharin Kosin, Executive Director of the World Food Programme, to deliver her statement. Mr. Kosin, you have the floor.
Thank you. Your Majesty, Queen Maxima, Your Excellency, President Kufuor, Your Excellency, Giuseppe Castiglione, Your Excellency, Archbishop Travaglino, Mr. Director General, Mr. Vice President, Excellencies, distinguished guests, ladies and gentlemen. Before I begin, let me start by noting that there were reports that many of you have seen of a WFP staff person yesterday who was taken ill after having served in the affected Ebola region. I want to thank the Italian government for their quick action and all of the protocols that were followed yesterday. Many of you called with your concerns and support, and I thank you for that interest. Please allow me to report that that staff member did test negative for Ebola, and we are very pleased that he will be returning to work, and we thank the Italian government again for their quick response. We will, as part of the UN, continue to serve and continue to scale up to meet the challenges of this tragedy. Ladies and gentlemen, it is a great honor to join this panel today and to acknowledge the unparalleled contribution family farmers make to our world. Because, ladies and gentlemen, as you've heard here this morning, family farming is the fulcrum on which our future food and nutrition security pivots. Already today, we've heard of the key social, economic, and environmental challenges family farms face. Yes, the unfortunate truth is that right now, in our world, too many farmers cannot sustainably feed their families or safeguard their community resources for the future. Whether the cause is lack of access to equipment, knowledge, credit, markets, or whether the cause is increasing spells of drought, erratic rainfall, or extreme weather events, the result is clear. The very viability of family farmers and family farming is now at stake. But today we also heard the enormous potential and the endless possibilities for family farming. Because with the right on-farm and off-farm investment, family farmers who manage almost 90% of the world's farm can build on their existing knowledge, strengthen their capacity, and improve their productivity. And the evidence clearly demonstrates improving family farming significantly benefits the wider economy. Ladies and gentlemen, in taking the opportunity to establish a new and sustainable and durable vision for family farms, one that enhances global food supply and protects the Earth's resources, we must address one universal problem: gender inequity. Because achieving the potential of family farming requires an end to the inequality endured by millions of rural women, which results in massive, widespread, and avoidable inefficiencies and losses. Yes, women's unequal access to agricultural inputs is well documented. Women are less likely to own land, to use fertilizers and machinery, and women are less likely to have access to credit, often prohibited from the kinds of schemes directed toward poor rural farmers. But it doesn't stop there. Women also face unequal returns on their inputs, working harder and longer for less. This cannot continue. Ending gender inequity is not just the right thing to do, it is the smart thing to do. Because FAO tells us giving women farmers access to the resources they need would lift up to 150 million people out of chronic hunger. And the evidence shows when women and men have equal status, children's nutritional status also improves. Estimates demonstrate equal status would reduce the prevalence of underweight children in South Asia by up to 28%. Turning the situation around requires transformative policies, promoting on-farm and off-farm, gender-smart as well as climate-smart agriculture. It also means we must put in place innovative programs like those implemented by WFP's Purchase for Progress initiative. Working with over 200 partners, we targeted women producers, traders, and marketers. In 5 years, we trained over 200,000 women and trebled their participation in farmer organizations, helping women to produce surplus crops, aggregate them, and market them collectively. But we can't stop here, and we won't stop here. We at WFP have committed to using our purchasing power to help move small farmers, particularly women farmers, forward. Annually, WFP purchases approximately $1.2 to $1.5 billion in commodities. Beginning in 2015, we will purchase a minimum of 10% of all commodities from smallholder farmers, many who originally were targeted through our Purchase for Progress program. We call it the Patient Procurement Platform, not just working with partners like FAO, EFAT, and AGRA, but the communities themselves, to increase smallholder yields, providing an identifiable, reliable market. But we recognize that as long as WFP is the buyer, it's only a program. We must also help identify commercial or government buyers to replace WFP. We take the risk to help the smallholders increase the quality and quantity of their yields. We accept the risk, but mitigate it through insurance, financing, and technology tools. The platform helps us move ever closer to achieving the goal of zero hunger. The conversations that go on at the global level are important, but the achievement of zero hunger will occur with our implementation of programs at country and regional level that make the difference for the 805 million food insecure and 165 million chronically undernourished. The global architectures are important, but the work at country level requires us all to work together. We at WFP are committed to doing just that. WFP will continue partnering with the private sector, civil society, all our UN partners, the governments which we serve, but most importantly, the people, the men, the women, the young people who work the family farms. They don't sit in these rooms, but they deserve our dedicated support. On this World Food Day, we at WFP acknowledge our mandated responsibility to play a key role in achieving zero hunger. Ladies and gentlemen, in 1961, the General Assembly resolution that established WFP states, in the administration of the program, attention should be paid to establishing orderly and adequate procedures on a world basis for meeting emergency food needs and the emergencies inherent in chronic malnutrition. Assisting in school feeding and preschool programs, implementing projects with the multilateral use of food as an aid to economic and social development, particularly when related to labor-intensive projects and rural welfare. Excellencies, distinguished delegates, the growing threat of food system instability and crisis requires us to scrutinize fully every link in our global food and nutrition chain, from farm to fork. Let us make this World Food Day, in this year of the family farmer, the turning point when we truly commit to moving beyond the challenges of working together at every level and bring the best of all of our organizations, our governments, our business, our civil society to the task of addressing the needs of the poor and vulnerable, helping poor family farmers. Because the key to achieving zero hunger is ensuring small family farmers move beyond the category of vulnerable, hungry, poor all year round. Even during the lean season, where the income from the family farm provides not only the food, but the farmer, she can also nutritiously feed her family all year long and also provide for the school fees, provide for adequate housing, and provide the hope for a better tomorrow for herself and for her family without hunger, without malnutrition. Excellencies, ladies and gentlemen, let us recommit today to working together for an even better tomorrow. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Cousin, for your inspiring words that are truly focused on the critical task of defeating hunger and meeting the challenge that we have today. And I want to add how we are happy with the health situation of our colleague from the World Food Program. I should now like to invite Mr. Michel Mordassini, Vice President of the International Fund for Agricultural Development, to deliver his address. Mr. Mordassini, you have the floor.
Your Majesty, Excellencies, distinguished delegates, esteemed colleagues, ladies and gentlemen. In the International Year of Family Farming, this World Food Day, dedicated to feeding the world and caring for the earth, has a very special resonance. Indeed, it reminds us all, once again, that family farming holds the key to sustainable agriculture, lasting food security and nutrition, and better lives for the rural poor. The world's 500 million smallholder family farmers produce 4/5 of the world food in developing countries. They are also the custodians of much of the world's agrobiodiversity. Yet today, these small-scale producers belong to the forgotten world, the rural areas of developing countries, where 3/4 of the world's poorest people and most of the world's hungry live. This is a terrible and tragic paradox. but it doesn't have to remain this way. For IFAD, the answer can be heard loud and clear. Invest in rural people. Invest in rural youth. Invest in smallholder producers. Indeed, to realize the full potential, smallholder family farmers need better access to natural resources, technology, infrastructure, services and knowledge, rural finance and markets. Addressing gender inequalities and discrimination and adapting to climate change will continue to require high commitment and concrete action. We therefore encourage our members to pursue their efforts to allocate more public resources for sustainable and inclusive agriculture and rural development. Recent trends are encouraging in several countries, but more is needed, also by enlisting the support of farmers' organizations, civil society, agricultural research, development partners, and the private sector. In this context, the Committee on World Food Security has delivered a positive and powerful message by endorsing yesterday the principles for responsible investment in agriculture and food system. We are confident these voluntary principles will translate into concrete progress and benefits for the smallholder farmers and the rural poor. For our part, at IFAD, FAO, and World Food Programme, we are strengthening further our collaboration in several critical areas, such as the reduction of food losses and building resilience for food security and nutrition in high-risk contexts. Together, we remain actively engaged in the post-2015 dialogue with a common and holistic vision for food systems, with concrete targets and indicators. IFAD is strongly committed to an effective cooperation between the Rome-based agencies. The latest report on the state of food insecurity in the world confirms the positive trend in reduced hunger worldwide. Our collective efforts bear fruit, but huge challenges remain, with more than 800 million human beings still suffering from chronic hunger. Moreover, current conflicts and humanitarian emergencies may deteriorate the situation. As a case in point, the drama of Ebola bears also the risk of a severe food crisis in Western Africa if it continues to strangle regional trade and interfere with the next planting season. Following the call by the Secretary General for a collective UN response, IFAD will contribute to the efforts of the World Food Programme to assist people in the rural areas of Guinea, Liberia, and Sierra Leone. On this World Food Day, aware of these many challenges, let us renew our commitment to food security and nutrition for all. Let's reinvigorate our respective and collective efforts towards the Millennium Development Goals. We still can avail of 440 days to achieve the MDG target of halving the number of undernourished people. To succeed, let us support more actively the world's small family farmers. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Mordassini, for sharing with us IFAD's experience and dedication to eliminating rural poverty and food insecurity in poor communities around the world. This World Food Day observance, along many, many others taking place around the world, has offered an excellent opportunity to focus public attention on the strategic role of family farming in agricultural and rural development and strengthen their capacity.
Excellencies, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for having attended this morning session. And I'm pleased to inform you that today's observance continues through a series of events. In fact, you are invited to participate in the launch of the State of Food and Agriculture 2014, which will take place in the Sheikh Zayed Multimedia Center in the atrium in very few minutes. After that, we want to invite on a financial innovation for food security, which will take place in the Red Room at 12:30. And finally, we want to invite in the World Food Day Committee on Food Security joint special event on innovation in family farming towards ensuring food security and nutrition, which will be take place here in this room at 2:30 p.m. And now I want to close the proceeding of this 34th World Food Day ceremony at the FAO headquarters. Thank you really very much for your presence.